A lot happening around the conference. Basketball heating up a bit, counting down to March. Football, NCAA news, and who better to help put it all together? Our hostess with the mostest for the Pac-12 Network on Twitter. Use the handle at Adamson Ashley. She's a BC Eagle, a BU Terrier, repping the 617. Ashley, how are you and yours doing?
I'm doing well, Steve. It's good to be back with you. I didn't know you were a DJ back in the day.
Yep, that's why I moved 31 years ago here, sight unseen, from Philadelphia.
Wow.
To be a part of a brand new adult alternative rock station. So there
that
you go.
That is my fun fact for this Friday afternoon.
I love it. So, Ash, today's national announcement, forever you win the tournament, the conference tournament, you pack for the big dance, but we're in pandemic land. So safe to say, I guess, they're offering some wiggle room, being that you literally are our resident English major. Could you kind of explain the NCAA announcement this morning?
Yeah, well, essentially, and it's, you know, I guess it's not surprising, but the NCAA is telling everyone, hey, if you want a conference tournament, go for it. If you don't and your teams don't want to play and the conference decides that they don't want to play, that's fine too. Whatever protocol you decide, I think it's by February 26th, you have to let us know whether it's going to be the regular season champion or conference tournament champion. And that is who will get the automatic bid. So, I don't think it's surprising that the NCAA did this. It's sort of putting it back into the hands. They said that the conferences should be the ones that decide, because there is, you know, there's a lot on the line. And you think about each team is going to have a different view of what we should do. And there are teams that a conference tournament is the only way they're going to get in the NCAA. So, of course, they're going to want to play. And there's teams at the top who a conference tournament doesn't necessarily really benefit the end goal of what they want to do in the NCAA tournament, and they're going to be safely in. So it is going to be very interesting to see how the next couple of weeks play out, and, you know, if there's a Power 5 conference that decides to forego a conference tournament, and then how those dominoes fall. I mean, it's going to be fascinating, and it's one of those things, I see it from all sides.
Yeah,
there's not going to be an answer that makes everybody happy.
It seemed like there was an element of logic, which, coming from the NCAA, sometimes that confuses people.
right.
I want to start on the women's side. Early this week, Arizona kind of took it to Oregon, running away in that second half. I mean, the only time that program's ever been past the second round of the tournament was when their coach played back in 1998. Ashley, as you know, this is a cutthroat league. 3 years ago, they won 6 games. How impressive should we be with the program that Adia Barnes is building?
It's phenomenal. I don't think you can talk enough about what Adia Barnes is doing. And so much of that is Terry McDonald deciding to come back. That was a really, really big deal. And I think she's a woman on a mission. And I think it's important. And we've talked about this sort of ad nauseum. I feel like Mary Murphy and I have this conversation all the time, but it is important to step back. And for people who haven't followed the Arizona women's program closely, to know what that program, the state of that program before Adia came in. And, you know, you'd go to a game and there'd be maybe 50 fans, 100 fans. I mean, and now it is like appointment viewing, one of the hottest tickets in town pre-pandemic. And I'm sure it's going to be that way once people are able to get back into McHale. But it's phenomenal. And I think, you know, we spend so much time talking about Airy, but there's Kate Reese, Sam Thomas. They've got a lot of really great talent on that squad. And Adia is the perfect coach. You talk about fit, and I don't know that there's a more perfect fit for Adia Barnes and you know, coaching at her alma mater.
As for the Ducks, I mean, this is their roughest stretch since Sabrina Ionescu and Ruthie Hebert were freshmen. They're young. They're without one of the vets, Taylor Chavez, because of protocols. And, you know, during this, no biggie, they face Stanford Monday. But from what we're seeing, how much is kind of they're lacking that on-court guide? Because this is a very young team that has lost games and practices and are kind of been hindered in their, maybe their ability to develop.
I mean, I think the thing that we have to keep reminding ourselves also, again, of the bigger picture, you lose 3 WNBA draft picks, like superstars. You've got 5 new phenomenal freshmen coming in. You've got a couple players coming back from injury. You got, you know, there. We knew this was going to be, and there's, you know, no such thing as like rebuilding. I think now, in terms of where the state of the program that Kelly Graves has the Oregon Ducks, like you're not, it is just reloading. But it was going to take some time to work things out, and you've seen that. And not to mention all of the, you throw in what 2020, 2021 has been, and the COVID and the pauses and the protocols. I mean, you add that to the mix of what was already going to be a year in which they were sort of trying to figure themselves out. And I think, you know, they're doing great. And I think the fact that their defense has been stepping up, and that's really what's kept them in the you know, top 15. I think you look at the fact that they've got some really big time players who are going to just continue to get better. Tahina Pau Pau, I got to know her a little bit over the summer, and I just think she's one of those. She's got the personality, she's got the swagger, she's got the game. Like, as she continues to get more experience under her belt, to get more comfortable, to, you know, just have more games at the college level, she's going to be phenomenal. Sobley is, you know, as advertised. I think Sedona Prince, being able to see her back in the starting lineup first time, you know, since late January, she's been in double figures, I think, every single game since she's been back. So there is so much to kind of, you know, you look at their schedule and or you look at their record and you're like, oh, well, I guess, I mean, I thought the Oregon Ducks, like, they don't lose. They never lose. What is this? What is that? Four losses? What is that? But when you pull back and step back and look at the big picture, I think they're in a great, great spot. And I think this game against Stanford on Monday at home is going to be a good one. They were leading Stanford, I think, if I recall correctly, at halftime when they played in Santa Cruz. So it's going to be good, and I wouldn't be surprised at all if Oregon found a way to win that game.
Talking with Ashley Adamson, the Pac-12 Network, let's get to the men's side. Now, one of the analysts you work with is a fave of mine. I remember Earl Watson starting 4 years at UCLA under Coach Glavin, played almost 900 games. He coached in the league. Ash, safe to say you don't need Google or Wikipedia for information. You have Earl Watson.
He is one of my favorite analysts that I've ever worked with, and I've worked with some wonderful, wonderful people and people that make me a lot better at my job, make me look a lot better at my job than I am. And Earl, I would say, I told him this last night, I'm like, you know what we need? We need to have, like, the Earl Watson podcast show, or, like, live, you know, live Facebook or live Instagram of just the stories that come out hanging out with him in the touchdown room as we're watching the games, because this guy, like, I'm like, how do you even remember all of this stuff that happens, not only from his playing days, but his personal story is just incredible. I hope he writes a book one day. I think he will, but he's fantastic, and I think the way he sees the game, and he knows so many of these players because he coached a lot of them, and, you know, and he spent some time in AAU, and he's really involved in the game. The other cool thing that I love about him is that he's dialed into the women's game. He's really tight with the UCLA program, and Corey Close is a very good friend of his. So I love hanging out with him. He's going to be back on Saturday, tomorrow, in studio, and he's got a good vibe. He is a cool cat. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah, I guess I would be remiss if I didn't say, you know, we got a big weekend coming, men and women. So what kind of coverage, where can we expect to see you and all the network is up to this weekend?
Yeah, so tomorrow we've got a doubleheader. We've got Washington, UCLA at Washington at 4:30. So we'll have a pregame show at 4, and then we've got Utah-Stanford at 7. So, you know, a couple of interesting games and bounce-back opportunities certainly for both UCLA and Stanford, who are trying to stop the bleeding, as it were. But I think that, you know, you look at, I think to me, the biggest game of tomorrow, the one that's the most interesting to me matchup wise is Oregon and Arizona. And I think, you know, 11 a.m. Pacific, I think that, you know, you look at, again, I think everything needs context in this season that we're in. And Sean Miller, for his guys, the fact that they don't have a postseason to play for, it has not been smooth sailing, certainly, this year. They've lost some games that they probably shouldn't have, and there's been some hiccups. But they do not look like a team that doesn't have anything to play for. And probably, and Earl said this to me last night, it's probably just starting to set in for these players that they're not going to be playing in March. And that's hard. I mean, you know, now all of a sudden everyone's got the resume watches, and every game means this, and everyone's, you know, looking at the standings. And Arizona, you know, unless everything really falls apart and USC really falls apart at the top, they're not going to win the regular season championship either. So I think the fact that he's got his guys, that Sean has his guys playing as hard as they are still playing, they have yet to be out-rebounded in any game this season. They've been tied in the rebounding margin twice, but they have yet to be out-rebounded, which is just, you know, that's a toughness stat. So I tip my hat to what they've been able to do. Now, conversely, I look at Oregon and the way that, you know, they came out against ASU, an ASU team that certainly is banged up and has had its fair share of issues due to COVID pauses and all the rest. But it felt like what we watched against ASU last night, it was kind of like, okay, this is a reminder of the fact that Dana Altman is a future Hall of Fame coach. He has a ton of talent on this team. This is one of the first times that they've all been able to play together. I mean, they're still not totally full strength, of course, but you look at where this team is and what they've been through, and I think that their ceiling is very high over the next month or so, and I'm excited to see sort of how it all comes together for them.
Yeah, with Duarte healthy and Will Richardson, that was the first full game they played together. Couple final thoughts for Ashley. Stanford, obviously, in your backyard. They've been kind of on the bubble most of the season. Joe Lunardi has him playing in. Jerry Palm last four out. Season five under Gerard Haas. You know, they got that elite recruit in Zaire Williams. So kind of what's the word about the caliber of this team? And if maybe the pressure's on a little bit after 5 years to kind of get in and establish that upward graph.
I think for sure people want, you know, and need, certainly Stanford fans feel like they should be in the NCAA tournament. I think, again, you look at what Jared Haas has had to maneuver this season. He's been without three of his starters, I think for at least half of his game. So Bryce Wills is finally working his way back into the mix. Zaire Williams is back finally, but Dejon Davis missed a bunch of time. Oscar Da Silva has single-handedly put this team on his back. He, to me, you know, it's a coin flip between Evan Mobley and Oscar Da Silva. Obviously, if USC ends up winning and finishing higher than Stanford, I think the Player of the Year award will go to Evan Mobley. But Oscar Da Silva, what he has been able to do, he is a matchup nightmare. And Jared Haas has been able to get his teams to just play really tough this year. They didn't play a home game until last week. I mean, they've been living out of a suitcase in a hotel in Santa Cruz or on the road since they left, you know, to go to that tournament to tip off the season in Asheville, North Carolina. So I just think, again, I don't want to sound like a broken record, but you look big picture at what they've maneuvered. Now, that loss to Colorado, that was the first time I felt like this season that I've watched a game and thought, whoa, what's happening here? I mean, that was the Buffs came to play yesterday, and I think that was as much of a statement win for Colorado as it was anything else. And McKinley Wright is just a man on a mission. He's getting to the NCAA tournament come hell or high water in his senior year. But Stanford, I think that, you know, Jared Haas is, I've been impressed. I've been really impressed with the job that he's done. Don McLean was on our air last week saying that, you know, he'd vote for him for Coach of the Year, given what he's maneuvered. Now, again, the most important thing is, how are you going to finish? And how are you going to figure out, you know, you can't lose this game against Utah. They were on the bubble going into that Colorado game. It was a quad one win opportunity for Stanford. They fell well short. Fewest points in a game this season. They had 51, I think. So, it's going to be interesting to see how they finish, because that's been the knock on Stanford, right? You know, you just can't really trust them. They've won games that they maybe shouldn't have won, and then they lose games that they shouldn't lose. So, but they got talent, and they play their butts off.
And lastly for Ashley, a football thought, kind of big picture, Ducks and Trojans. We know the league is down a little bit, but, you know, you look at the history of the playoff, Oregon in 2014, UW 2 years later, the only ones to be apart. But now Oregon and USC hit it big on the recruiting trail, top 10 classes. So what's the buzz about perhaps the top two programs this century helping maybe kind of raising the conference profile?
Pac-12 needs them to. I mean, I'm not going to shy away from saying that. The Pac-12 needs USC and Oregon to compete at the highest level. They really do. And I think, you know, again, you look at the Ducks, and it's going to be interesting to see sort of where this program is. Obviously, the big news that Tyler Shuck is transferring. And the fact that, by the way, I know we texted about this, he got 2 degrees in 3 years. Did I read that right?
Unbelievable.
I mean, I barely graduated with an English degree in 4 years at BC. So my hat's off to you, Tyler. but, you know, they've obviously got a new defensive coordinator. There's a lot of changes in Eugene within that program, and they've got a ton of talent coming in. But it is, it's going to be fascinating to watch next year sort of how Mario puts it all together. And I think, you know, same with USC. They've made a splash, and they're starting to get the talent, and the recruiting is completely done a 180 from what it was a couple years ago under Clay. So the Pac-12 needs those teams to be top tier, you know, clear favorites. And I think it's going to be really interesting to see kind of who is able to put it all together, given all of the things that coaches are going to be maneuvering next year, the transfer portal, it's like roster management. You could do a whole daily show on roster management in college football. I mean, it's the wild, wild west right now. Not to mention you got NIL coming down the pipe, and how is that going to affect things and programs trying to get themselves ready for that. So it's a crazy time to be a college football coach. That's why they make the big bucks, to figure it out. I can't believe we're sitting here that it's already mid-February and that, you know, spring ball, some teams don't know exactly when they're starting, but it's right around the corner for some programs. So it's crazy. It feels like time is standing still and yet also going at warp speed somehow.
Yeah, try and keep up, Ash.
I'm trying.
She is Ashley Adamson, as I always like to say, our hostess with the mostest. Glad you and your family are well. Always greatly appreciate your time, and I love the joy you bring to the work you do. Ash, have a great weekend. Enjoy all the action. And as always, I look forward to talking again down the road.
That means a lot. I appreciate it. Always love catching up with you. And next time, we're going to spend the entire 20 minutes, and I want to hear stories from your DJ days. So.
All right. You may need a bottle of wine, but that's fine.
Fine with me. Got one.
Thanks a lot, Ashley.
All right, Steve. Have a good weekend.